This is the Kinky Cast. This is an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 57 of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. Views expressed are not representative of the management of the Kinky Cast. In today's episode, we chat with Master Trish and the Butchman Experience. Here's your hosts, Woody and the Beast.
Thanks, Max. Welcome to another edition of the Kinky Cast. And sitting across the desk is a couple people here, and one is the Beast. How are you doing, Beast?
Hey, Woody. It's well today. It's well. We're not in New England buried under... How many feet of snow is that?
Well, it depends on which newscast you listen to.
Okay, and we don't have to deal with deflated footballs and all that.
I like deflated balls. No, wait, I don't. No.
Yes, you do.
I deflate them well.
You deflate them well. And Woody, with us on the other corner of this triangle, is the lovely Chrissy. Chrissy has somebody on the phone with her.
Yes, I do. Thank you, Beast. And thank you, Woody. I've got a gal from the desert country, from Arizona, Master Trish. Master Trish was introduced to me through Slave Pat. I started to look a little bit deeper into Master Trish's accomplishments, and I noticed some real interesting things. One thing in particular, Master Trish, that I found interesting about you is that you're so involved in the Butchman's Experience.
Well, hello all, and thank you so much for this invitation to come and spend some time, even though I can't be there in person. Thank you for having me.
Great. I'm glad you're here. But I was reading over your bio, and I noticed BDSM Club Desert Dominion that you were a founding member of. Would you like to talk about that? I didn't know there was a club out in Tucson.
Sure. I'd love to talk about Desert Dominion. It's very unique, and I think Tucson is very lucky to have the club. It's membership owned and run. So how I became a founding member of it was I was kind of discovered kink and my part in kink. And I came to a meeting, and I've been talking, this was back in the AOL days and instant messaging, and I had been messaging a particular person online for, probably a month or so. And this person kept saying, well, you need to come to this group. You need to come to this group. And when I finally came, they were having a meeting in a Denny's restaurant. And what had happened is they were having a split, and they were splitting off. And the person who had been running the club was running it out of his garage. And he kind of was getting tired of having a party in his house every weekend. And people were kind of tired of him dictating over the party. And he did, because it was in his house. So the club people were saying, okay, we're going to go off and we're going to make our own club. And we're going to have presidents, and we'll have a president, we're going to have a treasurer, we're going to have a vice president, we'll have an education chair and a secretary. That's what happened at the Denny's. So they were deciding they were going to have officers and who was going to be the officers. There was no voting at that time. There was people agreeing to step forward and do that. And it was my very first thing I ever went to that was physically a kinky thing.
Wow.
And I sat there watching these people talk and said, I'll be a member. So at that time, I was the 16th member into the club, and so it was pretty cool. I stuck with it. They found a building very shortly thereafter, and they signed a lease, and they started paying rent, and it was a yellow building inside, and everybody brought all the paint they had. They dumped it in one bucket, stirred it up. It was a funny gray color, and they painted the walls so they were no longer yellow. And people went around to the carpet stores, and you have those little mats of carpet samples that you used to be able to take home and see if you wanted that particular type of carpet in your house. People brought in like oodles of those carpet pieces and covered the floor with these carpet squares, so it looked like some kind of patchwork floor.
What year was this?
98, 99. That's kind of when I came in, and probably like around 2000, in the year of 2000, 2001.
And how many people were involved in this venture?
Well, the meeting I was at, there was only 16. I was the last one to sign up. And I don't even think everybody was there. I don't know. They had to go out and make cards, membership cards. So I didn't even really, I just wrote my name on a list at that time. And because not very many people knew me, they kind of just looked at me like, okay, we think she's going to be a part of our club, but we've never seen her around before. Who is she?
And what brought you to that group?
Well, it was just a part of my life at that time where I was huge on discovering my sexuality. And I had kind of done a few swinger things, and in this one particular place, I saw some bondage happening, and it was very passionate, it was very raw, it was very primal, and I said, I want that. I don't know what it is, but whatever that is, I want it. And then those people were dear friends of mine, and they took me for a lot of long walks, and had a lot of long conversations, and they gave me the book Different Loving, and I read that like a sponge, and said, this is what I want to do. And so I went online, and I started looking around for people who are into BDSM. I found one who happened to be one of the founding board members for Desert Dominion.
That's great. You found your family, your local family.
Yes, I did. Yes. Still a member of that club and enjoying it.
How did you get involved with MAST? How did you get involved with all of the things you're involved in now?
Oh, well, at some point, I guess the first position I had on the board or the council at Desert Dominion was a social chair, and I used to be, well, still am very, pretty much outgoing and very friendly. People thought I would make a good social chair. So I went around to people and said, what do you want to do? And someone said, let's have a big party. And so I said, well, we could have a fetish ball, and the fetish ball could be everybody's required to come down in their fetish wear, and we just have a night in the dungeon in our fetish wear. Or we can go out and get a venue, and we can have a ball, and we have DJ and music and stage performances of BDSM. We can sell tickets, and we can have our membership chair there in case people want to join us. And they said, wow, we want to do that. So I had the first fetish ball ever held in the state of Arizona. It was produced by Desert Dominion, and I was the organizer. And it was amazing to do because I'd never been to one.
That's really great.
But we did it. I had some great people coach me, and then because I was doing the fetish ball, I was starting to go all over the state looking for people who could be advertisers and vendors at the fetish, because that's how I paid for the venue, was by getting advertisements and vendors. I ran into the Butchman's people while I'm out there, and I wanted to know more about this Butchman's thing. I got kind of different mixed things, but I didn't get a lot of information. And people, I still hear that today, even though I think, wow, we divulged quite a bit, but at that time there was really not much information out there. So I kind of sat on it for all the way to 2005. I attended my very first Butchman's in August of 2005. I guess the rest is history from there.
And now you're the executive director, is that correct?
Yes, I am.
And yeah. You're an instructor as well. What do you teach?
That's kind of a funny term. I don't think we teach really a whole lot of anything at Butchman's. We facilitate, and we facilitate some very thoughtful conversations, and we create opportunities. In my opinion, we don't really instruct much or teach much per se, but we create opportunities for people to step into their own unknown and to discover more about themselves. And then the conversations that we facilitate are on self-growth and how we found life works for us.
We'll be right back after this message.
On the phone with us is Midori from San Francisco. How are you?
I'm doing good.
You have a big event coming up.
I sure do. I've been doing this for over a decade. It's called AIDS Life Cycle.
And what is that?
It's this amazing experience. It's a 7-day bicycle ride for 2,500 cyclists riding from San Francisco to Los Angeles. And there are 600 of us roadie volunteers. I'm one of the volunteer roadies. And what we do, we cycle, we pedal, we cry. It hurts. It's amazing. It's beautiful. It's fantastic. And do this to raise funds and awareness for critically needed HIV services and education.
And how can our listeners help with this?
See, the thing is, I'm fundraising too, and this year my fundraising has been really, really challenged, and I need your help. I'm sick of my friends getting sick. I'm also sad from various long-term survivors dying from, quote, heart attack, quote, cancer, and it's all HIV related. I'm also frustrated with the ongoing lack of education. So here's what I would love to get help in. One, I'll be doing all my Twitters and social media, so cheer me on as I post photos from the road. That's one. And I'll be wearing silly bunny hats. And then two, donate to my AIDS Life Cycle fundraising, because they have 70 cents to the dollar is going to services. And there are people that are living longer and able to live a healthy life because of this. And there are people that are not serial converting or becoming positive, and are people are having smarter sex because of the programs that are funded by AIDS Life Cycle. So I hope all of you out there will help me out.
Okay, listeners, go to the KinkyCast homepage. Look for the button that says AIDS Lifecycle Donate Now. Push the button and it will take you right to the place where you need to drop a few bucks into a Midori's cup for AIDS awareness.
Thank you so much.
We're back with Master Trish. Now, is Butchman's geared more towards those that identify as tops or bottoms, or how is it set up? I'm not familiar with Butchman's.
Well, one thing we do is we, on Friday, is, you know, we take a bunch of people who probably know or don't know each other into a room, and then we create this safe space for opportunities for experiencing things. That's why we call it Butchman's Experience. It's all experiential. So what we do is we have to get clear on the term. So we kind of give a unilateral agreement that this is how we're going to use the terms, top, bottom being a physical activity, dominant, submissive being an agreed upon activity or way of being, and master, slave as your authentic self of who you are. And sometimes that's a great mystery. We put on a lot of masks throughout life and throughout your day. So sometimes we actually kind of forget who we really are at the end of the day. So in Butchman's, we have three SM activities. That's the flogging. And we have a piercing release ritual, which is a temporary piercing. And then we have mummification. And during those three activities, we encourage everybody to have an opportunity for topping and bottoming in that experience. So even in the mummification, people want them, they get an opportunity to wrap some of the people, and then at some point they become wrapped and also lie down and they're mummified. And the same thing in the flogging. We have short flogging sessions, about 5 to 8 minutes long. And during that, we ask people who want to top to stand on one side of the room. We ask people who want to bottom to stand on the other side of the room. And then we match them up. And you think, oh, wow, that's scary. But we don't allow the barbed wire floggers. We only allow the suede floggers. And we're there as mentors throughout that time. So we are there to make sure that the bottom is receiving the flogging in a way that's not going to be harmful. And we facilitate a handful of those short floggings, and then we'll ask for those who want to do a long natural length flogging, which is about a 35 to 45 minute flogging. But in between those, we ask people, just because you were with person A in the first 5 minute flogging, now you want to experience topping it. And so you could be with a completely different person. So you're not paired up. It's just random who you get.
Oh, okay. That's interesting. So you pair it up with someone that you may have only met an hour before or a day before or maybe never even spoke to at all. That's interesting energy exchange there.
It is. And we talk a lot about consent and what does consent look like. We talk about not having an agenda before the flogging. Really what that is kind of like an egoic agenda. Like, I'm not going to make you fly and I'm not taking you on a carpet ride in 5 minutes. That's probably not really realistic. This is just an opportunity to put my ego and my agenda to the side and simply focus on being present during this flogging as a top or bottom. I'm just going to be present and mindful of what I'm doing and just let it flow through. So I'm present and mindful as I was going to be receiving the flogging, and I'm present and mindful as I'm giving the flogging, and just letting whatever needs to come up and let it happen. And then once people are kind of comfortable with that, they kind of decide if they want to do that. But by the time we've done a handful of those type of flogging, they know if they want to go into the natural length one with that type of agreement.
That's interesting. Now, the Butchman's is located in Arizona. Is that correct? That's where you're based?
Loosely, this all started with a gentleman named Master Steve Sampson. And he held Butchman's out of his house for a long time. And then at one point, it became Apex, which is the Arizona Power Exchange in Phoenix, became the home base for Butchman's, but also created Southwest Leather Conference, and he created the leather quilt. And so all of these things fit under the Butchman's umbrella.
I had no idea.
Yeah, and so they have a Butchman's board, and that board just oversees and keeps the records of those organizations. Now, at some point, Master Steve was asked to take on the NAS chapters, and Master Steve at that time did not have a desire to run each individual chapter. it was more of a safety thing so that MAST could ensure its continuation. So some things in the structure of MAST. So it's MAST International. It's not MAST local chapters or MAST by state.
Right.
And that's just the 501c3 is what MAST International is benefiting from. Butchman's Incorporated has a 501c3, and they can slide in under that umbrella.
Okay, that's interesting. I'm a co-director of the MAST chapter in Nashville, and we're not affiliated with any organization other than MAST International. We've been operating in the city for 4 years now, and I've been involved since the inception. I just find that's an interesting structure that you've created for the MAST chapters. And how many chapters are under that umbrella in Arizona?
I think at this time, I know there's two active. There may be three, because Phoenix is a very large, spread-out city. There's been talk about forming different MAST chapters to represent different sides of the city just because it's so huge and driving across town can sometimes take over an hour. So they've, and I'm not sure how well those little outlying MAST chapters are doing, if they've gotten, if they've applied and if they've been approved and are official yet. But there's a MAST chapter in Tucson and there's a MAST chapter in Phoenix.
Okay. Yes, I've heard about the one that's in Phoenix. In Apex, removed from Bushman's, but it's attached to Bushman's? I'm not sure I understand
that. No, it's not attached to Bushman's. It's its own standalone club.
Okay.
Which is also membership owned and run, but they have a special agreement with Bushman's Weekend Experience, and they allow us to use their space for the Bushman's Experience.
I see. And don't you also take Bushman's on the road?
Yes. Oh, that was like a dream of mine many years ago when I first started attending Bushman's. These people come and they get opportunity to step fully into the role of a slave or a master, and they hold that role throughout the weekend. And, you know, they discover many things about themselves. And often on Sunday when it was time for people to go back home, wherever home would be, we would have people who had flown in from all over the country, sometimes even out of the country, and they're like, wow, I've discovered who I am. I know what more about myself, and I'm going to go home, and nobody understands this. Could you please come to my town and have a Butchman's? And for a long time, we're like, no, we can't, because we feed the people throughout the weekend. We don't want them to leave the space. You know, they leave to go home and back to the hotels or their houses or whatever for sleeping, but they don't leave for meals. So we bring the food into the space and prepare it there for them in a way that there's opportunities for masters and slaves to practice protocol and giving, you know, orders of prepare my food and stuff like that.
Master Trish, is Butchman's more of an educational training experience, or is it a spiritual experience, or it's both?
It is both in a lot of ways. It is both. But more to the whole on the road, people immersed themselves completely into the weekend, and they wanted people in their own community to be able to relate to them. And so eventually we got people, volunteers, because we're all completely volunteer-run. Nobody gets paid for anything. And people said, yes, we want to put away a plan together so that people in other cities can host a Butchman's. And so we had to figure out what do we need in order for someone to bring us to their town and have a Butchman's. And we finally figured that out, so we now do that. Wherever, if the venue is there and enough people's interest to support it, then it can happen.
That sounds terrific. I know that you do venture into Atlanta from time to time, and I know several people that make a point to attend when it's out in the southeast section of the country. Another question I wanted to ask you was about the leather quilt. Could you talk about the leather quilt? I know that that's traveling the country, and it's so huge now that it's been moved into two sections, the east and west.
Yes. It's just wonderful how it's kind of taken on its own life. In some ways, it has been split in two. It was originally thought it was going to be a fundraiser of some sort and would be auctioned off, and then whoever purchased it would be kind of saying, well, for the better good of the community, you'll donate it to the leather archives. And that, in some sense, is still the thing that should either curator or any time we're done with doing this leather quilt project, we will donate it to the Leather Archives. It's very well understood that it will go to the archives. But right now, it's Miss Susan in Atlanta is the curator of the East Quilt, and I am the curator of the West Quilt. And every January, the quilt that was on the East Coast will now come to the West Coast, and the West Coast quilt will now go to the East Coast.
That's great.
And it's really gotten huge, and it's just really fabulous to look at because there's so many clubs and families that are represented on that quilt. It's just awesome to watch.
A lot of love and good energy in that quilt, definitely, as it grows across the country.
You know, it's interesting. I set it up in my house, and I will go over each square, making sure, like, threads and stuff like that are in place. And I clip them and super glue them down so that they don't unravel because of the shipping. And sometimes I'm just, you know, checking on the quality of the leather. Sometimes it's time to bring a bunch of boot blacks in and let them sit down and clean all the squares and make sure the leather is being kept in proper care. And I'll set it up, and I just set it up in my living. It'll be there for 2 weeks as I work on it. I'll have visitors come and they'll say, "What is this thing?" And they're just standing there in awe, and they don't even have any idea about the lifestyle, really. And I start explaining them to what these things mean, and they're like, "Wow," because just standing next to it, I can feel this like energy coming off the quilt.
For sure. How did it get started, or why was it started? Do you know the meanings behind the original conception of the quilt?
As I've understood it, it started as a possible fundraiser, and people just would start this leather quilt thing, kind of like the AIDS quilt, you know, but it wasn't necessarily family or people who had passed away. It was just something, let's just start this quilt thing, and then it just kind of took its own life after that and began growing and growing and growing. So when I'm standing next to it, often people will ask me about different squares that are on the different patches, but we've got avatars on there. We've got Club 15, and we've got some really, really old clubs on there that are pieces of history that travel around all over the country that you can see.
I know that you have a connection with the Leather Archives.
I've talked to the curator there so I can know what would be the process of taking the quilt and how would it be submitted. And I've often thought at times we may put the quilt there just to be there on display for special events or something.
Under your belt right now, under your cap, actually, under your cap, you have the Butchman's Experience. You're the curator of the leather quilt of right now in the West, founding member of Desert Dominion, and an owner of the Mast Tucson Group. What about your leather life? How did you get involved in leather? What drew you in?
I think it's something you kind of grow into. First thing I did that was, I think, kinky, well, as I can remember, as I did when I was 19 and I was newly married and, you know, I with my new husband, we decided to do some bondage. And during that, I tied him up and I actually was, I hurt him. And it was okay. It wasn't like a bad hurt, but I felt... The next day, I felt bad because I enjoyed what I had done. So, and back then, there was no personal computers. People didn't have personal computers. So I had no one to talk to about this. And I just said, okay, I'm a nice person. I don't know why I did that, but we're just not going to do that anymore. And I got very busy with life because, you know, then I got divorced and I was working and supporting children and I did not have time to think about this weird thing that I did to my husband, which probably contributed to the divorce kind of thing. So I just pushed kink out of my life. It was just this thing and I didn't even know it was kink. It was just this one thing I did that one time and I don't do that anymore, so let's just not talk about it. Then I started really exploring my sexuality, and I was in kind of a swinger type situation, and I was watching. I enjoy that. And one husband went across the room, grabbed his wife by the head of the hair, drug her back very dramatically to her room. And we were in a hotel room, and they had these long telephone cords. Now I'm really telling how old I am. There was these long telephone cords, and he ripped it out of the wall, and he tied her up. And by then, his cock was raging hard.
Hot.
And then he just fucked her really hard. And I was like, wow, that was I don't know what that is, but that. I want that. And they're the ones who gave me the book, Different Loving. Well, then I went on a quest to figure out, what is my sexuality? It's this thing, but I don't know what it is. And then, you know, I got sidetracked with, oh, let's do a fetish ball, and let's be the social chair on Desert Dominion's council. And I even was president at one point. But somewhere in there, when I went to Butchman's, I started getting a clue that I am wired differently and that there is this part of me that's not going to go away. And I might as well just embrace it and try to not be ashamed of it. To be ashamed of it would be saying I was created demented or crooked. And no, you know, and if I am, okay, I am.
Yes, no. You are. So, yes, you are. Yeah. And it's a lovely, lovely crooked, too.
It is lovely. So I just kind of grew from there.
Master Trish, what you're doing is you're incorporating all the pieces of you. You're becoming a whole person. One of the podcasts we did a while back with Capricorn, which just stuck with me, that she did not want to live fragmented, and she's pulled all of the pieces, you know, of herself into her daily life, into her life, and into her being. And that's right. What you did.
I think so. And I think a lot of that came through the Butchmans. And sometimes I say I'm on a short bus. It took many Butchmans to figure this out. But yes.
Yeah, I understand. I've fallen off the curb a few times myself. We'll be right back after this message.
Hi, this is Woody, producer of the Kinky Cast. I just want to thank all our listeners for all the great comments we've got back from you. You know, this costs money, and since our staff is all volunteer, and we do this as a labor of love since we're all members of the Kinky community, one of the problems that we have is paying for bandwidth, server space, and even keeping our equipment up to speed. Our studio equipment is old, but it works, and we just need to keep it working. If you feel that you could donate a few bucks to keep us alive, that would be great. Everyone here and the listeners will appreciate the quality episodes that we can bring you every week. As we start the new calendar year, we have great stuff planned, and I want everybody to benefit from the educational aspects, the entertainment aspects, and the really important people that have something to say. So join us in the new year. Go to kinkycast.com and click on the donate button.
We're back with Master Trish. So now you've embraced your leather identity and that part of you is thriving. What about your family? What is your leather family like?
My leather family. Well, I have a lover, goes by Master Tiffany, and Master Tiffany and I don't really have an official power dynamic. However, if you've ever seen us interact, she is of service of me, and I adore it. I would like to think that service and obedience are part of my language of love, and figuring out how do I feel loved and nurtured is when other people around me are of service or in service to me, and a certain type of loyalty that I sometimes take as obedience.
That's funny. I'm on the other side, and for me, not to serve and not to be needed is, you know, it's like this huge gaping hole. So I try to find ways to fill it through all different kinds of things, serving the community, serving my job, serving the Kinky Cast, serving at MAST. It's, you know, it's a definite need. It has to be filled somehow.
I totally get what you say, and yet in some ways you think about how much stuff I've been doing for the community, I'm still very involved in a lot of ways. That's giving to the community and being in service to the community.
Yes, I agree.
And to me, some of my greatest satisfying moments, which, you know, you kind of like, I'm going to snapshot this moment and remember it when times are not so pleasant, is been when I've had a slave in service to me and calling to me and doing stuff for me in the community that I've asked to be done and having it just come out beautiful and just like, wow. We together are in service to the community, and it's a synergistic equation for me.
Yes, it is. It's very beautiful and powerful, too. When it's working, when it's flowing right, it's great. I totally understand. A question I might have for you is, why do you have the title Master? What does that signify to you?
I've had people ask me that and say, do I use male pronouns with you? And I'm like, no, I'm totally female. So Master for me came through being part of Butchman's for me, because we have two roles you choose from, and the role of slave and the role of master. And as I started, because I personally did not think it was a very appropriate. I kind of like lady or the queen. call me the queen. Well, but when I use the word master in front of my name, it's for me, it's a reminder that I'm mastering something. I'm on a path. I'm on a journey of my own to be a master. And so mastering myself is a major part of that.
It is an ongoing process.
The other part of this is I'm mastering a slave. And what does that look like? And I hear a lot of people, and I'm going to be one of those people, say, I love service because it's part of my language of love. Nothing feels more loving to me than to receive service from someone. But what if I took out service? What if service was not part of the equation of my master-slave dynamic? Then what do I have? And this kind of goes back to the days when I used to ride horses a lot. And if you take off the bridle and saddle, what's left between you and your horse? And it's kind of the truth. And I kind of feel like that with my slave. If I took out the service, what would my mastery look like? And so then I get down to the heart of who am I and who is this person before me that's my slave? And how do I integrate us together to be that synergistic equation? That's the ongoing lovely dance that gets to happen.
Yeah, and that's a beautiful dance, too. It's interesting what you mentioned about mastery. It's an ongoing process. Always, always new challenges for both sides, definitely. I'm looking at a bio that I have for you, and it mentions that you teach local colleges and universities throughout the Southwest. What do you teach?
Basically, about BDSM, and my thing has always been, well, there was a time when it was illegal in our country to engage in BDSM and S&M activities. And so a lot of what I talk about when I come in there is we're not crazy. It's already been taken out of the book, so we're not crazy.
Right.
And we do this thing and what we do, and at the end of the day when I'm done with my class there, and I talk about basic BDSM, I often take in my toy bag because they want to see the toys. But at the end of the day, I tell them, look, I hold a job, I raise children, I pay taxes, and I vote. There's this other thing I do behind closed doors, and I don't want to be illegal for it. I don't want to be really discriminated on. So understand that I'm a sane human being, and I operate in these parameters, and it makes me very different from most people, but it's okay what I do. And I want it to be okay, and I want them to say, okay, that's what you do. I'm not there to convert anybody. I'm just there to give them a broader understanding of what it is for someone who identifies as kinky.
Do you teach to sociology classes, or do you teach to criminal justice? Who do you teach to? Social workers?
So I've gone to the student union, and I've talked to the all-women's group, the student women's group. And I've taught to law students, and I've taught to human sexuality classes.
That's great. I know locally here, we've had some individuals present at some of the colleges and try to broaden the horizons of the soon-to-graduate social workers so they would go out in the field and not freak out when they walked in someone's house and saw a flogger laying on the table, you know. Give them a better understanding of alternate lifestyles and alternate sexual styles. I hope that discrimination will end soon myself. I'd like to be more out and not worry about societal repercussions.
I totally agree with you. And we have some really interesting laws here in the state of Arizona where if I were to bend someone over my lap and give them a bare-bottom spanking, in the laws and the parameters of Arizona, is considered sex.
And in the state of Florida, flogging is considered a sexual act.
Yeah, that it's like that here as well.
There's still a ways to go.
Yeah, we have a ways to go. Well, we do and we don't, because quite frankly, we know that there are some people that, yes, that is sex for them. That is. So part of me says I want to celebrate that they see that for some people getting flogged or spanked can be sex. And yet, for some of us, it's not. It's just something we do for other reasons.
Foreplay.
Yeah, or bonding, or catharsis.
Yes.
You know, we do it for lots of many reasons, and they're all just as valid.
Yes.
And if I'm doing it for catharsis, I don't want to be told, no, you just had public sex.
I agree.
Because my sex, I identify my sex a little differently than that.
Well, I'm going to have to end our interview before I get spanked. Well, actually, I don't know. It might be nice. But I want to thank you so much for finding time in your busy schedule to talk with us tonight. I enjoyed it, and I really look forward to meeting you one day when you manage to make it across the country. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
You have been listening to episode 57 of The Kinky Cast. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. Next week we talk about cultivating your sexual authenticity. On behalf of Woody, the Beast, Chrissy, and all our kinky crew, I'm Max. See you next week.